When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Lord, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 41. NASDAQ futures up 205. So we're off to the races here to 2 days in a row. We'll see how long that lasts. So far, it's a... Well, it's lasting through today, at least so far. So we're doing okay with that. We had all kinds of sports this weekend. We've had all kinds of stuff going on. We have Greg going to give us our futures prediction on the year. We're going to talk a little bit about the football. Bears win. There you go. So everything is good, right?
Everything is great.
What did they? How many picks did they blow on their draft pick by winning their 10th now?
I think it was worth it, though. Did you see Santos try to do the Lambeau leap?
I heard about it. I didn't.
Oh man, they didn't like that.
Oh my God, it's just the way it goes. What can I tell you? But they haven't won up there in what? How many years? For God's sake,
2,200 some days.
That's a while.
It's the last time they beat the Packers.
Well, that's interesting. The market likes it. Who's in? Are you looking at the standings?
The playoff picture is complete. We've got in the AFC, the Chiefs are getting the bye. In the NFC, the Lions are getting the bye. And then for our side, Eagles Packers is 2-7. Bucks Commanders is 3-6. And Rams Vikes are... That's the 4-5 game.
The AFC, the Chiefs are getting the bye. In the NFC, the Lions are getting the bye. And then...
Are you echoing yourself?
For our side,
I don't know.
Packers is 2-7.
It sounded like you.
I think we're good.
Okay. So the Packers, they got to play like the Eagles now. I think they're pretty good.
Packers play, number two Eagles.
All right, well, I don't think that's what they wanted.
I wouldn't want to be the Rams either.
Who are they playing?
Vikings.
You got to play somebody somewhere along the line. The idea is to not play the first week.
Well, Chiefs are sitting down. Lions are sitting down. Bills get the Broncos. That's going to be... Probably a
there's only, there's
the
only
park.
Two people you get to buy, right?
Yeah. Bills Broncos, that's going to be probably a walk in the park for the Bills. Ravens Steelers. Steelers aren't really great in the playoffs, though, so expect probably Lamar to run all over them. And Texas Chargers, who cares?
Chargers are... They were pretty tough games. Sneaky. Did the Broncos end up in or not?
Yeah, Broncos are playing the Bills, though. Talk about a buzzsaw.
Bills are... Who do you think the best team, though?
With or without the refs?
Well, refs are interesting.
I think the league wants the Chiefs to win, but
whatever. Well, it's because Mahomes got the most commercials.
Yeah, and they got something to talk about every time Taylor Swift shows up.
Well, you know, it's not a bad dude for that guy. You think they're going to hang in? His brother seems to be doing better than him.
They're doing great. That's for sure. They got all sorts of stuff going on.
The brother's got a little more personality than you expect from a center.
Yeah,
but he's
good in the booth.
People seem to like him. He's like the everyman announcer. He's a senior. He's a lineman.
He's the everyman announcer, and then I think the wives have the podcast too. So they got the every woman announcer too.
There's only one wife. Where's Taylor Swift's that at?
She's got a co-host or something.
Ah. Well, that's not bad. You know, with the Howard Cosell, when he said they always bitched at him because he never played the game. He said, just because you don't play doesn't mean you know anything about it.
That's
you know?
True. Speaking of things that are the game but aren't the game, the Texans and Titans game, the Titans wore their old uniforms. So they were, what was it?
They've only been in Tennessee for how long?
Yeah, they wore the Oilers uniforms.
Really?
Yeah, that was nuts. They were really cool.
I remember the Oilers when they were, they were an AFL team.
Yeah, the Texans, what was it? It was like light blue and the one you picture McNair in.
Yeah.
Like the light blue with the orange patch, is it? They had the tower, the oil tower.
They had a guy that played for them when they were an AFL team. See if this guy even comes up on the internet. Charlie Tolar was his name. He was a halfback. He was about, I'm going to say he might have been 5'8". Sturdy little dude, was fast. And his gig was he'd run, if you got him in the open field, the dude would head for the guy instead of the other way and literally
Charlie Tolar.
Drive his head into the guy.
Interesting.
And, but it was bizarre. We loved to watch the dude play. And I think they're fullback was a guy named
early American AFL star who played his entire career with the Houston Oilers.
So the fullback, I think, was Cookie Gilchrist was the guy's name. And one of the guys at Pullman, one of my buddies, Les Murray, was the backup to Cookie Gilchrist.
On the Bills?
Whatever team Cookie Gilchrist was on.
His real name, Chester. Or no, real name, Carlton Chester Cookie. That was his
And he played for the nickname. Bills. Okay, so I'm getting my teams missed. But the guy at Pullman ahead of materials was a guy named Les Murray. And he, big guy, and imagine that. And he was at Pullman, and so was Mel Blunt's older brother, Al Blunt.
Interesting.
Yeah. In fact, we played a flag football game against those guys. We hung in there, but Al Blunt was too good. And his brother is considered, well, still one of the top five Steeler players of all time, Mel
so
Blunt.
In 56, he joined the CFL, and then he joined the roster of the Buffalo Bills in the AFL, I think.
Do you have Mike muted? Mike's trying to pile in.
Yeah, that was how the echoes we were hearing.
Can you unmute him and make it work?
Let's try it.
All right. Mike, you with us?
Yes, Tom. Sorry. Sometimes when I don't get you on my iPad, I look to the show, and that's why there was the echo.
All right. We know what they used to say when you called in from the car. Please turn your radios down, remember?
Yeah.
Remember when people actually used to do that? Please turn your radio down. Then some guy would just never get the hang of it, and they'd hang up on the guy. All right, this guy does a... And they'd hang up on the dude. Anyway.
Well, Charlie Tolar was the bowling ball, remember?
Yeah.
He was just... But he was used, and Cookie Gilchrist, I think, was with the Bills the entire
time.
Yeah,
that's what Greg just corrected me. That he was with the Bills. I remember those. I used to watch those games. They were fun.
They were good teams then, actually.
They were. How many joined the NFL? All of them? Not all of them. Was it all? Well, basketball got a couple guys didn't join. And then the one guy got the contract, the TV contract, didn't he? The guy from St. Louis?
I'm a little confused, Tom. Sorry.
In basketball, the ABA, not every team got in there. That's how the Bulls ended up with Artis Gilmore and those guys. But I think there was
Buffalo joined. They were, well, Buffalo Braves, they were for a while in basketball, I think. Because there was a good Bob Lanier was with them, I think.
Okay, boy, he was a great player.
Yeah.
Well, the one of the guys, I think it was a St. Louis franchise. Mitty Werby used to tell a story that the guy, when he didn't take his team, he negotiated for a share of the TV contract. So up until
the
like,
Braves were or are now the Los Angeles Clippers. They moved to San Diego and then they went to Los Angeles.
Okay. Greg, see if you can find the guy who had the TV contract. He ended up with a slice of the NBA TV contract, even though he didn't have a team, for like 30 years. The guy made a fortune without even having a team. I think he was a St. Louis guy.
That sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, it was a great. He didn't even have a team.
That guy.
But he said, okay, you're not giving me a team, but you got even a slice of the TV contract. And they said, okay.
I don't know about that one, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just ended somehow. And I don't know how it ended. Anyway, we'll get that story. Kevin will probably know. We'll talk to him on Wednesday about it. So what, Mike? What do you make of the world going on here? We don't hear about any wars anymore.
Well, that's because the leadership is on a sabbatical or whatever the hell they're doing. I don't know. They're doing the Lincoln Center and what else? Oh, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. That was interesting.
You're just pissed you didn't get one.
Yeah. Well, George Soros did, so that one kind of gets me a little bit.
Did he?
Well, I'll stay out of the politics, Tom.
Well, you know what? I was really saddened by how bad Michael J. Fox looked.
Oh, did he get one?
Yeah. And he looks terrible.
Yeah, he's looked not too good for a while.
When we were somewhere along the line, we used to take trips when we were on the trading floor. Talk about bizarre trips. We went to Telluride skiing, a group of us. And there were a couple of bars there. I forget the name of the one that had the pool table, but one of the dudes, Larry Mertz, and I pretty much controlled the pool table the three nights we were there. Finally, the last night, the guy goes, you know, you guys, we kind of like you guys, but gee, you know, when are you going to leave and give us our pool table back? But next door was a place called the Fly Me to the Moon Saloon. Now, how's that for a name?
That's a good name, actually.
And I was sitting in there waiting for a couple of people, and who do you think plunks down next to me? With Michael J. Fox. We had a long conversation. What a nice guy. What a nice guy. And then he ended up with this nasty disease, and he's still hanging in there, but boy, I feel bad for the guy. He's a good dude.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, how's that for the name of a bar? To Fly Me to the Moon Saloon. And boy, those guys with boy, they had coke all over the place, man. It was... Well, talk about out there and Telluride in those days. I mean, as the song said, they hide it in Telluride, right? If you ever flown in a Telluride, you're not going to do it without either closing your eyes or getting ready to do something to yourself, because the airport is on like this mesa, and it's a natural mesa,
right?
It's not a runway, so the thing kind of slopes down and then slopes up, so no matter what you do. When you hit on the landing, you bounce at least two times. So we landed, we bounced a couple times. Actually, it was pretty good. So I'm walking out, and we're the last guys out. Of course, me, I start BSing with the pilot. I go, is what was it like the first time you flew in here? He goes, first time I looked at this thing, I said, that can't be an airport. But if anything bad, it was any kind of breeze, then you had to land in Montrose and drive. So
yeah, well, that would make sense.
It would make sense, but... Telluride was a interesting place, and then and now it's all built up, of course. But we went before it was some guy on the floor named Mike Huffman had bought a condo. This is in the 80s. It was people before the crash, 87. He bought a condo that was couldn't have been 50 yards, not even 25 yards from the lift. He just walked out the door and walked over and hopped on. It was pretty friggin' nice. And
yeah, that's probably worth a lot of money now.
I'm sure it is. So all the wars are on the back page. We're given, we're not given, we're selling. How do you determine, Mike, when you're, we've talked a lot about logistics with you and some with Lou, but how do you, when you work the logistics, now what if we're selling these guys, I heard the litany of stuff yesterday, thousand bombs and some missiles and some other stuff. Now, does that just come out of inventory? What does it do to the inventory here? I mean, they said some of it's not going to be delivered.
Well, it depletes our inventory. That's some of the issue with I think that's why some of the Republican senators and congressmen, just Republicans in general, are worried about our stocks. And so it just hurts our internal inventory. That's all. And you know, when I was, I think I've told you this before, when I was in the service, we always had to be prepared to fight a two-front or two major wars. Well, now I think because of the stocks, we can hardly probably fight a limited conflict at this point. So, you know, we definitely can't do two major wars, and to me, we would be strapped to do one. So,
well, what I was listening to on the radio, of course, that's you never really know. They said some of the stuff is out of inventory, and some of the stuff's not going to be delivered for 2 or 3 years.
Right. Well, it there just isn't that much, and I'm not familiar with how much there is because I haven't, worked in the government for 7 years, so 7.5 years.
Well, I guess my question is,
When we're trying to supply both Israel and Ukraine, it gets tough.
Well, my question is, and I'm hoping, I don't think, despite, the Republicans thinking all these guys are a bunch of buffoons, I think the people in the military aren't a bunch of buffoons, and I think a lot of the stuff the administration has done has actually been pretty good, and a lot of stuff the other, when Trump was in, even if you're a Democrat, some of the stuff that people did there was pretty good. I think we do have some people working for us that aren't bad, but some of the stuff, do you think, the smart way to do it, if it was you and me, what a lot of people maybe never learned, I'm going to say didn't forget, was a real lot of why we were able to do this stuff so fast in World War II was because we were already ramping up really in 38, 39 to sell arms to the French and the Brits. So we kind of used their money to get the industries off the ground in a lot of ways. My question is, you and Lou have been saying some of these people, the orders and some of the stuff has been, either not ordered or whatever. Do you think that if we were smart, we'd be using some of their money to get stuff going that we don't have the money to buy yet? So the line is there, when they're done with their stuff, we'll have our stuff.
I don't know about that, Tom. All I know is, you've got, now we finally have responded to the Houthis, so that's a good thing. At least we're kind of keeping them honest.
Did we do it or the Israelis do it?
I think it's probably a combination of both. But, it could have been the Israelis. But, we've got ships out there. So we should have done something a long time ago, but, we didn't then. But I think now they finally realize we got to do something with them. And, the Israelis have kind of dealt with Lebanese, with the Hezbollah, and they've dealt with Hamas. So, we will see how that all shakes out. But at least the Israelis are acting as our proxy in this whole thing. So.
Well, I guess, as much as, it's scary to me by somebody who's in the middle, that neither side wants to give any kind of credit to the other side, no matter what they do. If somebody said it's dark out, the other side have to say it's light out. It's kind of crazy. But the last 2 years, even though I'm not, and even to this day, I think the Israelis had way too heavy of a hand in Gaza. But having said that, the issue with the Hezbollah and them finally doing some stuff with the Houthis, at the end of the day, at the end of the last year and a half or two, is the Middle East a safer place? Has Iran been denuded a little bit? I think I wonder if at the end of the day, I don't know that you want to give credit to a person, but at the end of the day, has the policy of the last 2 years made the Middle East a safer place? I think it might have been. It might have.
Well, I think it has helped, but the policy with giving the Iranians back the money, that was foolish. But other than that, we have, to a degree, as you just said, kind of held them in check or denuded them a little. So They really now have to think twice before they do anything. But they haven't hesitated before, and we're still the great Satan. So, well, Israel is probably the greater Satan, and then we're the worst. But I think we're the primary target.
How would you have? Everybody's all upset about us giving the Iranians the money. Now, granted, there's all kinds of different views on this, in the sense that Mexico, Maximilian, there's Maximilian bonds out there. There's Santa Ana bonds out there that the Mexican government said, not us. We're not paying them. The Germans have all kinds of bonds floating around from pre-World War II. They were supposedly gold-backed in banks, and I think the gold's still there, and they say, well, we're not paying them. But, you know, that's our dough, and people here own those bonds, okay? Now, the Iranian situation, the timing of it, you know, there's no question that that was, quote, the Iranians' money. Now, how you decide whether a succession government deserves or their money back or whether they should have to pay money back, like I said, it's somewhat of a slippery eel. The Mexicans think no. The Germans think no. Now, these guys clearly think that the money that was put over here, sent over here from the Shah for military equipment we never sent them, is their dough. Now, who's the they? I mean, it's clearly the Iranians' dough, if there was an Iranian citizen making the move. Whether you give it to this particular government, I don't know. But there's no doubt it wasn't our dough. I mean, it wasn't McDonnell Douglas's dough. They never delivered anything. So, I mean, it was somewhat of a tough question. Everybody here thinks that we just gave them the money. We didn't. It was theirs. Or somebody's over there. Or
well,
historically somebody.
You know, that's a... I mean, Tom, I understand your point, but, you know, what's the legitimate government? You know, a theocracy is not, to me, a legitimate government. They took over. So they don't have any right to the money other than, you know, probably than McDonnell Douglas. So,
saying it is, there's been different sides to this one throughout history. I mean, what would we think if Trump comes in and actually tries to be Mr. Dictator? I hope he won't. Why didn't somebody say, I'm not giving that kind of money back? We wouldn't like that too much.
No, we wouldn't like that, and we would probably react to it. So,
I mean, why don't the Germans pony up their dough? Why don't the Mexicans say, well, Santa Ana was our guy at the time, he's our guy?
The Germans now, you know, and they have a legitimate government, and they probably see Hitler as not being legitimate, and they don't want to pay his debts. So,
actually, there before Hitler was the one saying we're not paying. These were during the 20s.
Right.
And Santa was when? The turn of the century? When the hell was that?
Right. Yeah, it might even be.
But I mean, if you look at the
state, before that, right?
If you look at Maximilian, I mean, those guys were when they were like Alamo times, weren't they?
Yeah.
But it's it's still Mexico. People still got them. They say, hey, the country's still there. It says Mexico right on here. What's the matter?
Tom, I'm not an expert in financial stuff, so these might be better questions for Lou. I'd rather talk about sports with you.
Oh, yeah. So. I just think if they, you know, if you want to pay, you pay. If you don't, you don't.
Right.
So what do you make? We've got the Irish on. What's with the Thursday night games? I mean, I guess they try to do whatever they think they can get a night. But
well, they're trying to, I think, stay away from the NFL. And, you know, now the NFL's doing Saturday, Sunday, Monday for the playoffs. So now, you know, Notre Dame, Penn State are on Thursday night, and then Texas and Ohio State are Friday night. So there's no competition.
And then the game on the 20th, the final, there won't be any Monday night that night, probably.
No, there won't be. So I think they, at least the NFL and college football playoff, have kind of come to some sort of an agreement. But who knows? You know, this is all negotiated with TV. And what I found ironic about the whole thing is, I think somebody, I don't know who, asked to push the Notre Dame-Penn State game to the 10th of January, but that, you know, somebody said no to that. So to me, you know, Penn State's got an advantage. They get an additional, essentially, 2 days worth of rest.
Well, it should have been one.
Yeah, I agree. But the when they postponed the game because of the, you know, the attack in New Orleans, which was, you know, a legitimate postponement. I'm not questioning that. But the whole deal, I just think we're kind of getting the shaft-a-roo there, but that's beside the point.
Well, the I mean, would you think you would have doubled up on Friday? They had one in the afternoon. They're not going to do that. There's no ratings there.
Yeah, well, they didn't hesitate to put the Notre Dame and Georgia game at 4 o'clock in the afternoon because of a silly bowl game that TV had scheduled for 7:30. You know, who cares about Mississippi and at this point? It was Mississippi and somebody else. I don't know who, but Mississippi clobbered them. And they could have moved that game to 4 o'clock and put us at 7:30. So,
what's your feeling on these other bowl games? Just the way I understand it, if you know, Sidewash State plays Slippery Rock in a bowl game, Sidewash State and Slippery Rock are given a bunch of tickets they have to sell. Correct?
I guess so. Yes.
So when they buy those tickets, then they sort of rebate them money to get for expenses and the team and stuff to get down there. The coaches get their 2 or 3 extra weeks of practice and essentially get their young people, because the other old people don't play. They get themselves like a spring game, and it's on TV, and I guess you can bet on it.
Oh, and they get some money out of it too, I'm sure.
Well, they do, but the money comes from the tickets they have to sell. They sell. I mean, if they don't sell.
No, I bet you each one of those bowl games, Tom, has their own budget too. So there's probably some money that's given to the schools that play in the bowl game.
Well, there's gonna be some TV money.
You're right. Right.
But the gate is essentially generated by the tickets everybody has to sell. So you're basically hitting up your alumni for the tickets.
Well, I mean, you and I both know that some alumni, some schools travel very well. You know, like, you know, when we went to the Orange Bowl, it was full of Nebraska when Johnny Rogers clobbered us that time.
Wasn't that fun listening to those guys there for the game?
All I remember about that weekend is I stubbed my toe jumping from, and I could hardly walk at the end of the weekend, but that's beside the point.
You were in charge of lodging. You didn't do so hot, as I recall.
Yeah, I don't know how I became in charge of lodging. Where did that come from?
Because you said, don't worry, we could get in with the band, and then they wouldn't let us in.
No, well, we had Blades family down there, right? And then
we had Patty Ward family.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking too.
Oh God. Anyway, it was a crummy game, and I remember we left right from the parking lot, drove home.
Yep, that was a lousy game.
God. You know what? There's a guy. He's one of the best players I ever saw, Johnny Rogers. I think.
Yeah, he was good. He was incredible.
He ended up in Canada or someplace.
Yeah, I think he was in the NFL for a little bit, but you're right. He had much better success in Canada, just like Tom Clements. You know, Clements was mobile enough. He wasn't good in the States, but, you know, on the bigger field in Canada, he did very well.
So. I can't imagine trying to track Johnny Rogers down on that big field.
Right.
Well, so who do you like? We've got we got Greg too. Who do we like in the pros and in the college? I mean, as much as they seem flawed, I still think Ohio State's got the best 50-man roster.
I think they have a whole lot of speed, which I am very wary of, and that Jeremiah Smith is something else. I mean, what a receiver. Yeah. Jeez. But I think Ohio State is going to be dependent upon, you know, the quarterback, Will Howard. I would like to see – well, Texas's defense is okay, but I don't think that they – can give Will Howard happy feet like Michigan did. Michigan never – Howard had a terrible game against them, and Ohio State, you know, in turn lost. So,
What do you make of this Michigan, I won't say fiasco, but they had a horrible year, and they have a great game against Ohio State. And then Joel last week was saying that they're missing like 7 or 8 guys that were going to get drafted. A bunch of other guys were in the portal. He said, I almost got the call to suit up, and then they clobber Alabama.
I watched most of that game. That was very impressive. You got to say, Alabama never got in a rhythm. They were always kind of at least behind. They didn't look like they were at least I don't know. It just didn't look organized. It looked very un-Alabama-like.
I have a question for you, two sports dudes. The SEC seems to be taking it on the chin a little bit.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, what I'm asking is, they had a method of being better than everybody else, and I think I could describe the method as saying
paying players.
No, what I'm saying is, they, unbeknownst to a lot of people, maybe even you, Greg, it's very difficult to maintain an 85-man scholarship roster on most colleges. And out of the 85, if you don't actively get rid of people, you end up with half the guys that are never going to play pro ball. They don't grow after high school. They don't wherever. So Alabama and Georgia had their shtick where they would have actually more guys. They would have 85 on scholarship. Alabama had some, was it a junior college down the road, Mike? That guys like,
yeah, well, a lot of them had junior colleges, Tom. I mean, that's...
What I'm saying is they really had a 90 or 95-guy roster because they had people waiting, and they were pretty quick to get rid of the people that they didn't like. It actually was a one-year renewable scholarship. It's not a four-year ride. Most people think it's a four-year ride. It's not. It's a one-year renewable, correct? And your schools like Notre Dame, Stanford, Michigan, those kinds of places, pretty much honor it for 4 years, even if the person doesn't grow or whatever. Those guys, they were the guys who started this stuff were Daryl Royal and who was the mutton-head at Nebraska? Bob Devaney?
Right.
They would get rid of people right out of the gate, so they always could bring in the maximum. I'm saying, it looks to me like the Irish and some other schools are quicker, and I don't know if this is the moral high road or low road, who didn't do that necessarily, really have adopted this portal very rapidly. Every guy in the Notre Dame game last week, as you know, that scored a point, came through the portal and was a grad student.
Yeah, but, I mean, yes, but, you know, Alabama has developed their people. Saban, I don't know what he did to keep on top of the game, but obviously it didn't work with DeBoer this year. But, you know, Greg can opine, but the SEC did beat each other up this year. It was a much tougher conference. I think they became too big. We'll see how that works out. It could end up being Ohio State versus Penn State again in the finals, and that would kind of suck. But we'll see how that goes.
Well, Georgia doesn't have anybody on their team from through the portal.
Well, I think Georgia is.
Georgia's going to have a real problem if they're going to have a real problem with Texas. So say Texas wins and even if they win the national championship, Texas beat Georgia or no, excuse me.
No, Georgia beat Texas twice.
Right. At the beginning of the season or in the middle of the season when they were number one. And also I think they beat them again in the championship in overtime. And they would have two wins against the national champion. That would be interesting to see.
Well, I personally think Georgia would have given us a much harder time with if their first string quarterback would have played. Although,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, and Stockton just didn't have the experience to handle the blitz.
His name is Gunner.
Yeah, well, Notre Dame blitzes a lot, and Stockton had a lot of high.
The buzz over the weekend.
Happy feet and ran the ball too much.
At least on Notre Dame Twitter, the buzz over the weekend was the NIU coach saved the entire season for Notre Dame.
By the way, that was reported on Stacks and Jacks 8 weeks ago by me.
Yeah, they were real fired up about that this weekend.
You know the story there, Mike.
Yeah, that the guy, the coach from NIU, talked to Marcus Freeman and told him how he. Work things out.
But, you know, I mean, I'm saying I think the SEC was locked into their old method. Georgia, I think I was reading this weekend that they got nobody through the portal and they lost guys through the portal. Alabama, every one of these other teams that you watch in these bowl games when you're too bored to not watch it, every one of them's got a guy from Alabama.
I think. Yeah, you're right. And Notre Dame has guys from Alabama now too. So it'll be interesting next year.
Well, somebody, one of our guys, would we have Mr. Flanagan? We can pile in him wherever he wants. Mike, everybody talked about our little thread, how the, this is an interesting Notre Dame story, but how four or five different players can make a difference. How's that sound for a stupid comment? But when I was a junior, we went down to the Orange Bowl, right? And we lost on horribly on January 1st, 1973, correct?
Well, no, I think when we were sophomores, Tom, is when we went to the Orange Bowl.
I thought that too, but Kevin looked it up. I think it might have been... anyway, the next year, the Irish won a national championship. Or real close to that. But the difference was, Era went to Father Hesburgh, and he said, we got to lower some of the standards for people coming in. We just can't compete. So he brings in... Ross Browner, Willie Fry, Al Hunter, and Luther Bradley, and there was a
well, and Tony Rice too.
Yeah, they think. No, this is our senior year.
Oh no, that was Holtz with Tony Rice, right?
They bring in these guys. They're all freshmen. To say they made a difference, we don't win that Sugar Bowl game without those four guys.
No, you're right.
The Sugar Bowl was 73.
Yeah, but it was December 31st, so it was the 70. Normally, the bowl games are the dates are. Like the 72 Cotton Bowl would be the 71 or the 71 season. But because the Sugar Bowl was on New Year's Eve, it kind of screws that up a little bit.
Well, when you and Kevin were talking about this, okay, freshman year was Theismann in the Cotton Bowl.
I went to that.
It's sophomore year was the Orange Bowl, the terrible defeat. I don't know that we did anything junior year.
There's one year we didn't go.
Right, and then senior year was the Sugar Bowl. So.
See, Kevin...
1973 was the national championship.
Right, that was December 31st.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Now, the question is, which year did we go to the Orange Bowl? Was it sophomore or junior? I thought it was sophomore.
It was junior year.
Kevin, Mike, we're wrong on that, because I thought it was sophomore year, too, but it was junior year. But before Clements played.
Okay. But who was the quarterback in the Orange Bowl then? Cliff Brown, right? Yeah.
He was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, he got us, we only lost three games that season, so.
Yeah, well, but in the same year, say, how can the same team look that bad and all of a sudden win the national championship? I'll give you four names. I just gave them to you. Russ Brown's in the Hall of Fame, right?
But they switched quarterbacks, too. Clements ended up being the quarterback.
Well, I wouldn't say the whole thing, but an injection of talent. I don't think with the guys that we got through the portal, we win last week. Do you?
That's a good question. Bo Collins, he hasn't been all that great this year, but he was a portal pickup.
It was also the 1973 Orange Bowl. You're right. It's January 1st.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It was
all right, confusing. So that was junior year then. Okay, I guess, I was way off on that one.
Yeah, sophomore year, we didn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it would have been another. How the hell they got to the point where they're playing Nebraska? I have no idea. Because Nebraska was number one, right?
Well, I think we were an afterthought on that one.
Well, they tried to. This is history for anybody who's interested. But the what they were trying to do, the Big 12. The winner there traditionally would go to the Orange Bowl.
Right, that's the way it was, yeah.
And then the Southwest Conference, which was around at the time, that was Texas A&M, all those guys, they would traditionally go to the Cotton Bowl. And then obviously the Pac-12 and the Big Ten would meet in the Rose Bowl. To the extent that they could, if there was another team in the mix, they tried to get them to match up at the Orange Bowl or the Cotton Bowl, because those were the only three big ones. The four big ones, the Sugar Bowl. The Sugar Bowl was... that was the SEC, right?
That was always the SEC, right?
And then the Fiesta Bowl kind of made a move up, where one year they picked up Notre Dame and West Virginia, and they had the national championship game. And I went to that one, too. Because they were the only place that didn't have somebody that was supposed to go there. So if there were two teams that weren't in those conferences, that were 1-2, like in 88, they picked up the Notre Dame-West Virginia game.
Well, and it's funny because, it's not funny, but West Virginia was probably an independent then, as was Notre Dame. So they just ended up with the 1-2 rankings, and Lou Holtz beat them out. So
that was an interesting game. That was the first, massive TV game I was ever. I remember sitting there for 4 hours going, God, I can't remember the first quarter. It was like they had a good team. They had Major Harris guy. He played pro, didn't he, their quarterback?
I don't think he played pro too long. I have a good friend of mine who was a graduate from West Virginia. He always says that, you know, that Chris Zorich should have never attended Notre Dame, and, you know, because he was the heart of the defense. And he said he would have never gotten into Notre Dame, you know, using regular academic standards. How many,
so. A lot of guys wouldn't have.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, come on.
Colts did manage to get some talent, that's for sure.
I mean, it's the guys, I mean, our year, I mean, Mike and I were in economics. You were in economics, right, Mike? I mean, we went to a bunch of economics classes.
That's true, Tom. Yeah.
But, I mean, we were sitting there next to Dave Casper and these other guys. Now, whether they were geniuses or not, they were always there. Right.
Right.
I mean, I never went to a class where he didn't show up. And, you know, it's not like, I mean, today, does anybody even care? Undergrad, maybe. But
you know, that's a good question. These guys with the getting the graduate degrees, I mean, it's more power to them, you know, to get to the school and then get a graduate degree out of it.
Well, I could have.
I hope Riley Leonard does that. I mean, Hartman, I don't know what he did, you know, because he's essentially a model now. So, I mean, that's an exaggeration, but.
In grad school, now, in business school at the University of Chicago, I mean, you had 20 courses, and everybody was there paying what they thought at the time was a bunch of dough. It turns out now is, you know, chicken scratch compared to today. You did your 20 classes and you got out. I mean, I never audited a club. But the other schools, the economics classes, those guys were there. They were there forever. I mean, they were Belushis. They were they'd audit a class, and if you took a class halfway and you got the first test, it was too hard for you. You can withdraw and get half your tuition back. So you could be a football player and land in like economics or something. Nobody cared. I mean, no, you could withdraw from your first four classes. Nobody care, as long as somebody was paying for it.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
There's a huge difference between. I don't think if you go to Notre Dame Law School, they're going to cut you a break.
No, I don't think so either.
Business school probably won't, but everybody else. I mean, I guess if you're in chemistry, but it doesn't matter if you're on the 6-year plan, is what I'm saying. There's no progress towards whatever. You don't know if those guys are doing anything. Nor do you probably care, right?
Yeah.
Now, undergrad, you're still supposed to be making some sort of progress, right, Jan?
Yeah. I mean, there were unclassified grad students. I was one of them at Notre Dame for a while, where you're not in a program. As long as you know, stay above the GPA requirement, you can continue to take classes, get a degree eventually or not get a degree, but you can kind of drag it out if you want to.
So you were on the 7-year plan?
No, I screwed up. I didn't realize when I started senior year that I had enough credits to graduate in mid-year, and they'd already allocated, you know, my student loan money for the entire year. I couldn't get a refund of that. So they told me at the Arts and Letters office, why don't you just apply as an unclassified grad student and apply the tuition to that. And your degree will be effective in January, but you can attend the graduation and get it then, which is what I did. So.
He was a double secret grad student. Did you know they had those?
Yeah,
things?
Really.
You learn something every day. God, a double secret grad student. What do you say we take a very?
I was an insurgent, Tom.
What do you say, Mike? How about we do a quick break? Hang with us. Just give us a 10-minute. Dissertation on the three wars, and then we'll let when Jen and I'll talk about some of the rest of the stuff, and then we'll have Nancy. We're gonna have a real quick break. SP Futures up 45, Nasdaq Futures up 217. So 2 days now, big rally. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas on the board. Of a real quick recap here, because everything's up. S&P futures are up 45, NASDAQ futures up 211, so we made back our three bad days last week, pretty much. Dow up 183, you're up real quick. DAX up 265, 1.3%. FTSE only up 8, call that flat. CAC around up 155, 2%. So we're not sure exactly what the Foxconn revenue came up. So ASML's up 4%, that's a big move. Asia, Nikkei finally trading, down 587, 1.5%, so they made up for a couple of lousy days, evidently. Hang Seng down 71.4%, Shanghai down 4, call that flat. Just as a way of remembrance, Friday, Dow was up 339, S&P up 73, was a huge day. NASDAQ up 340, this is after two down days in a row. Bonds, unchanged, 4.6. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.45. Japan up 3 basis points, 1.13. Oil, up 60 cents, 74.56. I'm going to say, well, Greg, are they busting out of the range or is at the very tip top of the range? One or the other. Brent up 57 cents, 77.08. Natural gas up 24 cents, 3.60 with the cold weather. Arbob up a penny, 2.06. Gold up 3.70, 26.58. Silver up 83 cents. That's almost 3%. 30.89. We have a nice silver position, so that's a good day for those guys. Copper up 9 cents, 4.16. Foreign exchange. Dollar weakened out here a little bit. Dollar slumps 1% in report of narrower Trump tariffs. There's not going to be hardly any tariffs, but it's time. The list of what he said he's going to do versus what he's going to do, I don't want to compare those lists. Anyway, the dollar is back up. Euro is back over 104 after being under 103. It's a big move. 1% move in a dollar is massive. The British pound up 125, and we've got Bitcoin up 826 at 99,120, trying to get back to 100,000. Greg, is there a quick traffic weather sports?
There's a quick traffic weather sports. 7:03 here in Chicago right now. 29 degrees. Weather alert. We've got windy with some snow possible. High of 31 later. Phoenix 41 right now. Pleasant with sunshine. High of 70. Lots of congestion on 90. We've got minimal congestion on 290 at least so far. And in sports, let's see, DePaul lost to Villanova. That was a butt-kicking, 5,600. Northwestern lost to Purdue, 61-79. And Illinois wins at Washington. That was 81-77. And like we said before, the Bears beat the Packers. That was on a Cairo Santos last-second field goal. And now the entire playoffs are set with the Chiefs and Lions having the number one seeds in the AFC and NFC. That's all I got, guys. Back to you.
Quick question before we hand it over to Mike about the wars. How is it that, and is it possible to have too much money? The Irish men played North Carolina in basketball in South Bend on Saturday. The Irish women played North Carolina basketball in Chapel Hill on Sunday. Is anybody find anything wrong with that other than me?
I don't know what to say, Tom. When I read that in the thread, I really didn't get what you were.
Well, if you, I'm sure they're chartering. You're not going to write commercial out of South Bend, I don't think.
No, the one time when we left South Bend, it was when we were in Europe. The women were flying commercial, so.
Well, it still seems to me
that's basketball, so yeah. Maybe it doesn't pay to charter something for the basketball team.
Well,
I don't know.
You would think they would. Are they going to have? You would think, since Rutgers is in the same division now as UCLA or the same league, that you at least put several teams on the same plane, wouldn't you? for a weekend of volleyball, swimming, and other stuff. But
that would make economic sense. But I don't think that the sports people, the schedulers, are worried about the economics. You know, who knows?
They're above the money law. Jan, wouldn't you and I like to be above the money law? No matter what we spent, we wouldn't care.
The few remaining years I have left, it would be fun. You know?
Other people's money, it's a great thing. OPM disease, they used to call it on the trading floor. Okay, Mike, what's going on? We're shipping arms to Israel. Ukraine is going on. The Houthis seem to have quieted down, or we're just not hearing about it? I guess I'm asking you.
No, I think that they've quieted down to a degree. Ukraine is essentially at a stalemate. I think there are... Both sides are probably waiting for Trump to come in to see what happens. Israel is still trying to kind of decimate both Hezbollah, Hamas, and whether it's the Houthis or Iran. So Israel is still working their agenda. And the reason why things were overdone in Gaza was because Hamas hides within the population. So, you know, it really is extremely unfortunate the way things have happened. But, you know, Hamas are dirty, dirty people, you know, and I guess that I would use a better, a more graphic term, but I won't. But, the Israelis want them off the face of the earth. So they're going to keep continuing to get rid of Hamas and its leadership. You know, when you hide in hospitals, that's not following the rules of or the laws of warfare. So, you know, the Israelis are dealing with that. Hezbollah, same thing. You know, they've been building up an arsenal against Israel for a long time, and the Israelis wanted to deal with that too. And the Houthis, they're kind of an offshoot, and I'm not sure how good they really are, but they're a thorn in everybody's side. So,
what do you think happens with the new guys in Syria? Which side do they pick?
Syria. I don't know that much about it anymore. So, I don't know whether this new guy is an offshoot of ISIS or whatever. But you know, Syria. I think I've said it before. I think is, you know, a lot of Syria is the Wild West. So, and now that Assad's out of there, the Alawites are going to take it on the chin because they've been ruling Syria for a long time, and so now it's payback time.
They were pretty bad people.
Right.
It just seems like John, I would say it's a very important piece of geography to just be up for grabs for the next century. Somewhere along the line, you would hope somebody would put it. How does this guy in Jordan manage to keep the place somewhat normal? Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Mike. That's okay.
No, go ahead.
No, he's a master at appeasing isn't maybe the right word, but the impression he gives is somebody who's cool-headed, even-handed, doesn't have access to grind, you know, hither and there, and to be able to make that work as well as it has, given what its composition is and how volatile that situation is, you know. I don't know if it's statesmanship or if it's just charisma. I can't really, you know, say for sure, but it's a master performance, I'll tell you that.
Well, plus he deals with how many refugees, for God's sake?
Right. He keeps the Palestinians in check. He's got them in camps, and I don't know how he does it, but, obviously Palestine, you know, the Palestinians need a homeland somewhere, and it's got to be in the Middle East, but Jordan isn't going to give up any ground, and neither is Israel, so who knows how that's going to eventually end up.
Yeah, I thought for sure it would be solved by now. When you think of how long ago Clinton and those guys were working on it, that was a long time.
Well, that was Carter, started working on it, you know.
What do you think his legacy is going to be? I mean, pretty interesting guy. He got caught in kind of the crosshairs in the inflation, the economic stuff. Maybe the fact that he was an outsider wasn't the best, but he brought some people from Georgia with him. But he got caught. I mean, that fiasco with the Iranians, or not the Iranian, the Iranian situation.
Yeah, it was the Iranian with the helicopters, right?
Did you read his comment, Mike and John, that He easily could have been elected again if he just would have blown the hell out of him, and he had the power to do it. He said he just didn't feel it was right.
Well, but that's the way Jimmy Carter was, you know. A man of principle. So, granted, he had Burt Lance working for him. It might not have been as principled, but Jimmy Carter was. I think he'll go down much higher than Biden, for instance. Let's say
we don't want anybody with principle anymore, do we?
Hell no.
Why would we want that?
That's a luxury, Tom. Come on.
That's a luxury. Yeah, you know, I was listening to somebody the other day talking about redoing Mount Rushmore and how Lincoln didn't belong there, Jefferson didn't belong there, and neither did Washington. I mean, what are you talking about?
How about Teddy Roosevelt?
Well, maybe he was the one. Maybe Washington was the only one they liked. It was three to four they didn't like.
Even that's not a given today either.
Are we mad at Washington too? I mean, we got to be. He must have done something.
Well, he was a slave owner, so you know that's let's rewrite history there too.
Oh God, was he ever even in his place? He was always fighting, always trying to go back there. We kept dragging him back to Washington to do something.
Well, but his place was pretty close to Washington, so yeah. I mean, have you ever been to Mount Vernon?
No, is it a
beautiful place? Boy.
It really is, and it's, you know, I don't know how far it was from D.C. at the time in a horse and buggy, but it's not far now. So
wherever Jefferson lived, they said it was like 2 days for him to get to Washington.
Jefferson was in Charlottesville, which is where I am, and it probably was a two-day ride.
Yeah. I was, what the hell was that? I was reading something along the line of if George Washington hadn't have been here, I mean, we really have three people that change kind of the course of history. I would say it would be Washington, Lincoln, and Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, if we didn't have those three guys, I don't know what the place would look like. Kind of.
Well, Jefferson, was kind of critical in the founding days too, because Jefferson and Madison both, because of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And
I read a thing once where they said that one of the biggest weaknesses in the Constitution is the amount of power that's given to the president, and it's actually way too much, according to this guy writing the article. And he said the problem with that was everybody in the room knew that George Washington was going to be the president, even if George Washington didn't, and everybody thought that everybody after him would be another George Washington, and they haven't been. I don't know, you think there's any truth to that?
Well, I think there is some truth to that, and, you know, Washington, supposedly he turned down, you know, a third term because he didn't want to be the king.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there is some truth to that. So.
Yeah, and things like the Electoral College were, you know, a way of placating the colonies to let them feel that they had, a way of participating in the selection process of the president, when they knew that they had given quite a bit of power to that position. And that they had to appease those forces and said, this is turning into another monarchy. So the Electoral College was really sort of tamping down that protest.
I often wonder if we should have a convention pretty much at every level. I mean, the city of Chicago could sure use one. Illinois could probably use another one. And I think the federal government could use one. Although when you do something like that, it's like, what, you know, cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war. You won't know what you're going to end up with. That's a problem. But I think there's a couple of big problems with this one that those guys, and you're going to get mostly people on the right, sorry, John, that'll say, oh, yeah, those guys anticipated all that. They couldn't possibly have. They couldn't possibly have anticipated the corporation. I don't think they could possibly have anticipated that somebody in Vermont can influence the election of a representative in South Carolina. In those days, how long would it have taken you, Mike? 2 weeks?
It would have taken a long time. I mean, you know, in some respects, well, I think in more than some respects, I think you're right, Tom. We do need a convention. And I think that's what Trump intends to do with Doge and Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. They want to try to somehow reform the bureaucracy, but somehow we need to reform the electoral process too. You know, I'm all in favor of term limits. I probably said that before, but I mean, we'll see how all this goes.
they keep talking about the deep state and all that. Well, I may have been part of the deep state when I was in the military, although I certainly didn't know it. I was responding to bosses. So, yeah, I think some of the deep state stuff is kind of malarkey, but that's my own opinion.
Well, I have you know, my issues with, you know, who's purer than Pharaoh's wife? I mean,
yeah, right.
I mean, Musk has got $9 billion from the government, and he's going to run into other people that are wasteful?
Right, yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, it doesn't mean he's not a bright guy, and he can recognize waste, but he appears unwilling to look in the mirror and say, there was some, I'll give half of it back. That's not going to happen.
Well, he does cut when he takes over a business, so we'll see.
He's never cut his own salary.
Well, I'm sure he didn't, and, you know, I don't know about Vivek. I don't know what experience, you know, what's his background. I think it's finance, but...
Well, I just, when you do these kinds of things, I actually think that there's, and I think you guys agree with me on this, although we don't all agree on much, but like when you were in the military, there was a process. I mean, it may not be the best, and maybe it could be improved upon, but there is something. I mean, I don't, these guys come in, now we all vote. Most people think they're actually voting for something, but all you got to do is vote in my district in Illinois. You're not voting really for anything. But say you are. Now, what exactly are these two guys? I mean, are they going to be salaried by the government?
It's a good question, Tom. I don't know.
Are they going to have a staff? Who's going to?
Oh, I'm assuming they will have a staff. That somebody's got to do the work.
Okay, so now is the staff going to be something that is in the White House? There's going to be 15 guys sitting there. Or are they going to? They have to have their own bureaucracy to go after the other bureaucracies, which would be...
Well, see, that's kind of what bothers me is, you know, they want to go after civil service. Well, you know, patronage jobs were done away with a long time ago, and the civil service is supposedly a meritocracy. But, Trump bringing his son-in-law into the White House and his daughter into the White House... He already has kind of violated that to some degree. Now I want to see what happens with Vivek and Musk, because you make a very valid point there. You know, what's their, how long are they going to last? And, you know, is Trump going to get fed up with Musk and then fire him? You know, I don't know.
But at least Simpson Bowles, are these two guys going to be his Simpson Bowles? They spend 2 years doing all this crap, and when it's done, nobody pays attention to anything?
Well, but knowing Trump, it'll result in something. Who knows? Simpson Bowles, they made great recommendations. It's too bad nobody implemented them.
Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of problems with, not so much, I have real problems with Trump and what he tells people and what they hear and how they get all charged up on stuff that is free and useless. I mean, the idea, he's got everybody figured out that if he can fire half the people in Washington or a third of the people in Washington, all of a sudden their tax rates are going to go down by a third or something. That's the impression he's given people. I don't think there's a lot of people in Washington, Mike, that don't do anything. I mean, I don't think that in your job that you didn't do the best you could and didn't do stuff that was worthwhile. I would question, and you probably would as well, does the CIA, NSA, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, all if they have their own groups that do all their own intelligence?
Well,
is there duplication?
There is duplication of effort, Tom. I can't disagree with that. And there's duplication of effort probably everywhere.
Right.
You know, the medical field, there's got to be some. And, the way you get the Medicare rates vice regular private rates. And, you know, there's a whole lot of change that could happen if it was done in a reasonable fashion, but I don't know.
Well, the one I'm more closer to, that's why I always ask you about the military side, is the, I guess Elizabeth Warren was the big champion, his big consumer.
Yeah, the SCF, whatever it's.
Those guys are going to, you know, consumer concerns on banks. Now, there's like thousands of people who work there, so they have their own human resources problems. Well, to me, they're duplication of what the comptroller currency is supposed to do, Federal Reserve is supposed to do, and the FDIC is supposed to do. They're supposed to be watching out for consumer stuff in banks. And no matter how many agencies we have, the banks get bigger and bigger. And oh, by the way, they have the biggest spread ever between prime rate and credit card rates, and probably the biggest spread ever between T-bill rates and what they pay in checking accounts. They don't still pay anything, even though the rates have gone from, what, 0.5% to 5.
Right, and you still get a penny a month or something.
So,
right?
I mean, is there duplication? That doesn't mean that people don't go to work and don't do anything. But I guess where my point is, or I'm way too far to get to it, the money part is what people don't get. If Trump is successful at getting rid of 25% of the people in Washington, which is really a lot, I think that cuts the budget. What do you say, John? 0.1%? Not even.
It depends how it's done, I think. The administrative state is what's really costing people money. I mean, the regulations and the way these, positions and these philosophies survive whatever administration happens to be in office is really the problem. And I think the idea, for example, of getting rid of the Department of Education, stuff like that, that sounds radical, but that's not been around for not even 50 years yet. I think we could well do without it. And other things, too, where there's just been a creep of people who are not elected to anything, who are, screwing up everybody's life and costing them money.
I have no disagreement with that. I'm saying is the impression, again, Kevin will be all over me, Trump never said, I'm going to cut the budget by 30% by doing this. It doesn't matter what he said. It's what people hear. I've talked to people, and I said, oh, man, as soon as they get done firing these people, my taxes are going to go down. No, they're not. Not even close. What percentage of the budget goes out to people in checks? It's over half, isn't it? I mean, the numbers don't match the rhetoric, I guess is my point.
Well, and even if that were successful, what that would do to the economy, have people on unemployment short term and maybe long term not participating in the job market at all, would be catastrophic. So you can't wish for too much of this stuff without realizing you're asking for something you didn't bargain.
Well, I would love to see the people at the Department of Labor that are screwing around with brokerage firms and IRAs and fiduciary standards and things like that. On my worst day, I don't care if you can them all. All right, so what are we talking about? 50 people? What does that do to the federal budget? It's not me peeing in Lake Michigan. Right? I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing it happen, but what does it do to the budget? Nothing. That's my point. Go ahead, Mike.
Point, Tom. But John makes a very valid point with the administrative state. Somehow we have to reduce that. And the amount of regulations that the regulations have to be cut back and simplified somehow. So,
well, look at in my industry, I'm probably more familiar with it than I ever let on, being on the board and all those kinds of things. I think they're way, way bloated. I don't think they do their job. I think they absolutely harass the small firms, and the big firms do whatever they want, which is what happens kind of in every bureaucracy, right?
It seems like it, yes.
I mean, is anybody really going to go after any of these? What do you guys think of the lady who quit the Washington Post?
Well, the cartoonist?
Yeah. Did you see the cartoon?
She's lucky if she never ran into this problem before in her professional life, I think.
It's for those that don't know, there's a what's her name?
Ann Telnies.
And yeah. She's a... I didn't even think there are any cartoonists left anymore, to be honest with you. But evidently, she's a cartoonist for the Washington Post, and she did one Trump standing there looking like he's an emperor, and all these people supplicating with bags of money. And one of them looks like Bezos, and then Mickey Mouse is prostrated on the ground, right?
Right.
And, yep. They're basically, kowtowing to the emperor. And the Post refused to print it. Or I guess you still print a cartoon, right? They refused to print it. And so she quit, saying, I don't want to work for a place like that. Let me ask you guys, if, and I'm not going to lambaste anybody, but if Trump really wanted to be a dictator, and if he somehow pulled it off, I don't think he can, and I don't think he really wants to be, but if he did and if he was able to pull it off, I don't think for a second these big firms, they'd basically bend over for him. Thank you, sir, may I have another, wouldn't they? They don't care. I think they care.
Well, go ahead, John.
No, I would. I with the way these corporations are being run today, they're looking for any way to grease the wheels possible. And if it means you have to do that with a dictator, it doesn't make any difference to these corporations who it is, or really what their philosophy or their, you know, party is or anything else. They're happy to do it, and they'll get their foot in the door some way or another. They have no scruples. So,
I mean, I'm sure it happened before, because people, all your inaugurations are from outside money, right? I've never seen anything as blatant as this, where you show up at the guy's place with a check. Have you ever seen that? Anybody? I mean, the money got there somewhere. I'm not saying the other guys were pure Pharaoh's wife. I don't think they were. But, I mean, have you ever seen anything this blatant? Where the heads of corporations that... Now, how can he turn around? We have this debate, and I'm actually not with you two guys, not with Mike. It was debate all the time, coming from Chicago. When you give money to people, what exactly do you think you're buying, and what do they think they're selling? Now, if I give this guy $1 million, am I safe for antitrust for 4 years? Well, what do I think I'm buying, and what does he think he's selling?
Well, what does anybody who advertises at any sporting event get for saying we're the official, you know, drink coaster maker for the NFL or whatever? It's in exchange for exposure, for advertising, for priority. And, you know, when you look at that, a website for any of these outfits, the first ad you see is for the, you know, the official whatever it is. And this is everywhere now, and I'm not surprised. It's always been involved in the inauguration celebration process too, and any political event, and certainly any sporting event. Now you're blinded by the number of neon signs in any venue now flashing at you. And the reason those signs are there is because somebody has gotten their foot in the door and had an agreement. And the size of the advertising, the frequency of it, whatever, it's all, you know, by design. And it's been negotiated and carefully scrutinized and monitored too. So I'm not surprised by any of this stuff, really.
Well, what I'm saying is, again, we'll have this discussion more at length, but, you know, if I go to a Clinton rally, in which they had a bunch of them in Lincoln Park, not Hillary, Bill, and somebody, say Mike has a nice place and he invites 10 of us over and we all give him $1,000 and he adds his $1,000 to it and gives Clinton, you know, $11,000. He's a bundler. What do I get for my $1,000? What does he get for his? We're not talking about dumb people. I mean, these guys have probably way too much money, but I mean, no, they have it because they don't waste it. I mean, rich people don't exactly throw money around. Everybody thinks they do. They don't. That's why they're rich. But, you know, what do we get? What do I get for my $1 million? Would I be stunned if he's in office for 3 months and all of a sudden I get a knock on the door from the Justice Department saying, oh, by the way, Microsoft, you've been one of the biggest abuses of monopoly power in the last 20 years. Do I think I bought my immunity from that knock? I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, I think this is really what happened in the case of JFK when, you know, during his 1960 campaign, he got involved with Sam Giancana and the Chicago mob to get their minions out in West Virginia to make sure he won that primary. And he did. And the mob, of course, was looking for payback when it came to Cuba. And, you know, Kennedy wasn't taking their phone calls. And we know how that story ended up. So,
well, I'm saying, I've never been in that position necessarily. I mean, I know that with the SIBO, when people came to town, they would come over and have a breakfast or something, and, you know, they get cookies and scrambled eggs, and the amount of money you could give somebody was $500, I believe, maybe $750, something like that. So at that level, I thought that was actually really good politics. They got to meet people, ask questions back and forth, what's your business like? Most politicians don't know anything about the options business, and when they left, they knew a lot more, and they would take questions on other stuff that people... I didn't think there was anything wrong with that at $500. Now, if it had been $25,000, now I'd question. Well, gee, that's kind of high. I mean, I don't think we were buying anything at $500. I guess is my point. We're not even paying for half the guy's airfare, for God's sake. Back when those guys used to fly on commercial. But what if it was $100,000? Now what? What did we buy? I mean, I'm asking you guys. I don't know the answer.
Well, they're getting some degree of influence, Tom. It's ironic to me, you know, that Zuckerberg went to Mar-a-Lago, and he actively campaigned against Trump in 2020. I mean, he probably helped win the election for Biden. And then you got Bezos going down there and paying homage to, and all the other guys. So, you know, that there's something going on we just don't know what it is. But I'm not naive enough to think that that they don't get something out of going to Mar-a-Lago and talking to Trump.
Well, I got a quick story for you, then we got to get Nancy in. We do have her, right? But I had, there's this, not that I've ever been, actually, you guys have been in this place, Ceres. Not that you've ever been in there having a drink. At the very same table that you were there, Mike, one of the young lady, they had a group of three or four young ladies that came from Croatia, I think, or someplace over there. Where's Count Dracula from? Whatever that was from. That's where he.
Count Dracula's from Romania.
They're from Romania. Okay, they're from Romania. Not that they were related. I put two and two together. And boy, talk about the best.
Actually, Count Dracula's from Transylvania, but that's in Romania.
Oh God. Well, but I mean, talk about the best young ladies. They get here, and every one of them went to school. They all got an accounting degree. They all got something. One of them is running a trucking company for her husband. I mean, they're just special ladies. And one of them, the youngest one, she sits down one night. I get in there, and nobody's there. And she sits down, and she goes, I talked to you for a minute. And I'm going, oh, where's this one going? And she goes, you know, Chief, when I was a young girl in Romania, when we were communists, the newspapers, you read them, it all looked like somebody had, like, read them before and cut stuff out of them. And now that we're not, she goes, the newspapers, I mean, talk about bare knuckle. They swear at people, they call people names and stuff. She goes, over here, the newspapers sound just like we did when we were under communist party. Now, why? I mean, do we really want one of these guys handing Trump all this money and then owning one of the most influential newspapers? I don't know. I don't think so. But what am I going to do about it?
Well, I think at the very least, these people making the contributions are expecting to be left alone by any of the higher ups in government. And maybe it isn't. That they're looking for active intervention, but they're certainly looking for, you know, a wide playing field without interference. And this is maybe the worst kind of influence peddling.
Well, that's what I mean. So we're going to have the if they owned a brokerage firm that was huge, I could count on people sitting in here going over our stuff, but not them. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, that could be, Tom. That's, you know, as you have probably, you know, you pay to play. So. They're paying.
I think the number's gotten worse, though. I really do. In my Chicago years, as soon as Nancy's here, pop around, Greg.
Come on.
Oh, okay. In my
morning.
I mean, Nancy's a Chicago girl. In our formative years, there was graft. In the words of my uncle, it was, we know the level of graft and we're okay with it, was his term. It was, if the uncle was out of a job, can you get him some job someplace as a janitor? And in return, would he be a precinct captain for you? There's a little slush there, but it's very little. It's almost like that's the way people are. But once you get above that, I don't know that anybody really cared so much about that other kind of graft. I mean, I never paid, but I got a job with the public schools because my uncle was the head of the union. I didn't pay anybody. And, oh, by the way, I never missed a day. Everybody was dying to get me. rather than all the schlumps they had. Was it right? Should there have been a big test? I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, these are crummy jobs. Nobody wanted to be a janitor, except if you're going to school, right? Or to go sit in a Secretary of State's office where it's hotter than hinges of hell and stamp license, you know, driver's license for people. They're jobs, but they're not. It's George Stigler, Nobel Prize winner, thought that maybe the system where you give people jobs,
the spoil system?
No, not the spoil system. The
patronage system.
He thought the patronage system was actually more efficient than the civil service system. Because if somebody didn't show up, you could fire them.
Well, that might be true, but all right, something that we, and this will be my last shot for the day. The Germans have the guest worker system where they brought in a lot of Turks to help out with the menial jobs that you were just talking about, Tom. And then that leads to citizenship. If we could ever get our act together on immigration, we could do the same thing with the farm workers, all the people that are doing the menial jobs for us that some of the population isn't willing to do, and then we could have a legitimate immigration system. So
Well, the immigration
And now there's, you know, millions of Turks in Germany that are viable citizens paying taxes and the whole bit. So,
well, you got to get people paying taxes, boy, because the other way is the thing here in Chicago, and I'll let you go, Mike, is the immigrants that I see in my hood are all standing at the Home Depot every morning wanting to get a job. The people living in the homeless camps, they're just on drugs. They're not doing anything. The difference in problems that I see, they're not even close. Now, granted, there might be some other immigrant places where guys are doing dastardly deeds. I don't know about that. But the one I'm right near, I go by there. I don't see them smoking dope. I don't see them drinking. I don't see them doing anything. And half of them now are walking to the bus in the morning. They must have a job somewhere. So in terms of those guys are way more willing to get on the tax rolls than the people living under the bridge, it seems to me.
But no, I agree with you. But, you know, some of this is a mental health issue, too, and I don't know how we correct that.
I don't either. Mike, thank you. We'll let you dash. Talk to you later. After the Irish win, we'll have you back on.
All right, Tom. All right.
So, Nance, I don't know if you've been listening in. We're solving all the problems of the world here, or none, depending on how you're looking at it.
Yes, I've been listening.
What do you think? We're all messed up?
No, it's been going on since the beginning of time. What else is new? Come on.
Oh, so only John's messed up.
No, I don't think John's messed up.
There you go.
Thanks.
John and Nance, tell us how what's going on in your world, but in terms of the tax base, what's going on there, John? I was looking at the labor numbers last month with Carl. We're under 60% of the people now that are actually working that are allegedly in the labor force. It's down to 58%. That's danger. I mean, I don't know how you do anything at that level. But before we do that, Nance, what's going on in your world? Mortgage rates are pretty steady. Maud says there's some houses for sale. The weather hasn't been horrible, so there's been some people buying. Does that mean you're doing okay for January or what?
I would say that it looks promising, but the REITs are still in the upper six, low sevens. People are still holding on, hoping that, you know, things can change back down to three, which probably will never happen again. So, at least not in my lifetime. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. The inventory is still low, so let's see what happens.
Nance, we got you on the 110-year plan on your lifetime.
Yes, that's just perfect. Perfect.
What did the last person, the oldest person in the world die yesterday? Was he 115 or something?
That I don't know.
I think I heard that.
I have no idea on that one.
No, the last survivor of Pearl Harbor died last week. He was 105.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
I don't think he's not going to be buried on the Utah, though, is he, Jen?
No, I think he's buried in a family plot or. He had the chance, or the, you know, the choice if he wanted, I guess.
Well, they wouldn't take the body. They only take the urn. So we don't want to get cremated. Kind of lose you out. Yeah. Anyway, so Nance, is anybody refinancing or no?
No, that you're not seeing at all. No, not at all.
What happens if people have to move or get trained? Are companies still? If somebody has to move, does the company still have these big packages for people, or they don't do that anymore?
As far as I haven't seen one in a very long time, so I would say they don't do that anymore.
They actually used to buy your old house and pay for all your moving and everything else. I mean, it was a big deal, right?
Yeah, they take title to the house and manage it. You know, you were free and clear of it. You were out of it, and they were, but that's best. But it was a very different market, and there were people coming and going all the time. No relo company ever did too badly, I don't think, in any of the big cities. They were very shrewd investors, and they made it easy for people to be, portable and to pick up and go places. And we could have that today again if we wanted to. We had schools; people wanted to put their kids in and everything else. But I don't see any sign of that happening anytime soon. So
no, it's going to be kind of rough. I'm just kind of with the change of administration. I just wonder how much time the population is going to give this guy in terms of to do what they think he says he's going to do. Because some of the stuff just keeps hitting you in the head. I was reading, Nance, you got the thing about the Social Security increases. And if you look at it, I mean, the older people, hopefully they're not that dumb. For those that don't know, if you're on Social Security, normally the Medicare part, Medicare A, which is the hospital, correct, is, I use the term included, free. It's not really free because you paid in for it, but it's included, correct, Jen and Nance?
Yes. Yeah.
And then now if you want the doctor part, that you have to pay for.
Correct.
It's like $175 a month or something. And if you say yes, they don't send you your full Social Security check and then send you a bill thinking they're never going to get it back. They just take it out of your, say, Social Security check, correct?
Right.
So
that's for everyone.
Yeah, for everybody. And but then they send out a letter that, this is, I'm reading this on CNBC, that the Social Security increase based on the CPI, which, of course, anybody with a brain cell doesn't believe, was what, 2.1, 2.2, something like that?
It was 2.4. I don't believe it.
2.4. And yet the increase in the Part B was $174, and they raised that, whatever it was.
It was 144, I think, last year. It was 178 or something for me now.
Well, it went up from 168 to 178. So it essentially went up 6%.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, they're saying, oh, by the way, the stuff we're paying you, our CPI is 2.4%, but the stuff you're paying us, it's 6%. And people just sit there. I mean, I don't know what you're supposed to do. I mean, I don't want you to, whether you're supposed to write your congressman or you're supposed to grab a sandwich sign. I hope we're not at the stage where we're grabbing guns or grenades or water balloons. But how do you send that out to 40 million people and expect them to just, hey, this matches up? I mean, how stupid do you think everybody is? Just question.
I don't think anybody's stupid. I think we all know what's going on. I'm not for or against anyone, okay, in this conversation, but I do think some of the parting shots Biden is doing is not right.
Like what?
Well, if you were getting a government pension, they didn't allow you to get your full Social Security because you were getting it from the government. And now he's rescinded that after 40 years.
Yeah.
And they already said Social Security is in, enough trouble. I don't think that was right at all.
Well, how did that used to work? I mean, first of all, question number one is, who doesn't pay Social Security? I'm going to say, in the Chicago School Board, when I was a janitor, they didn't pay. Railroad retirement is totally separate, right? Still to this day, it's public. It's public institutions, and
right, they didn't pay in, correct?
Well, but if you had any kind of a summer job or anything else, you did.
Yeah, but then you could get it for that.
Right, but you didn't pay in as much because it wasn't full time. Right. There's no. I mean, you wouldn't have. If you've been a teacher, you probably have paid in somewhere, someplace, right, John? If you did some consulting work or something.
Yeah, this is the situation that I'm in. I mean, I worked Social Security jobs from 1969 till 1994, and like the census job, later than that too, which where I paid into Social Security, but I stopped having regular employment and having Social Security taken out in 1994, and when I got the teaching job, which paid into the State University Retirement System Pension Fund. So I get an annuity, and I got an annuity for the first year after I retired, and then I took my Social Security early, but the amount was adjusted because I had to supply all the paperwork on my pension, and I got had a conversation with Social Security saying this is what my award would be reduced by because I was already receiving the government pension and, my teaching capacity. So this is this Windfall Elimination Act under Reagan in 1983, which has held until yesterday when Biden signed this, repeal of it. My Social Security was reduced by something like $380 or something. It's close to what the press releases are about the average person.
But it wasn't a total. You still got something. I mean, it wasn't a total deal, right?
Oh yeah, it's not like I didn't get any of my Social Security. I got, but the adjustment was made based on the fact that I was already, I had qualified for my annuity under my pension plan. So that this was, you know, considered double dipping or a windfall. And therefore, I, you know, didn't get my full Social Security. I took it early anyway, so I figured I might as well take it early because it's already going to be knocked down. Because I'm getting a pension anyway, so I'll never get full Social Security. But this will change now based on this, you know.
But what if you paid? That's why I saw the article and I wrote out to you people, I wrote out to everybody. I said I really don't, unless I see a whole bunch of numbers how it works, I really don't understand it. What if you were a teacher, I was going to say, or a janitor? how many janitors do you think had consulting jobs? I don't think too many. But suppose you're making, you know, 30 grand a year as a janitor, and you're not, so there's no Social Security for there, but you're making, you know, 50 grand a year is doing something else, selling cars on Saturday, and you're actually paying a full Social Security rate in. Why shouldn't you get both? You paid them both.
I think you did get both under that circumstance, yeah. Correct?
You until 1983, yeah.
No, I think if you had two, I believe that I thought you got both if in fact you made another, if you made the other wage, you know, if you made the other wage, you got paid on that, but you didn't get the other stuff counted towards Social Security.
Yeah, it ended up you only got kind of one. Now, when my brother had the age-dependent children, my dad was a policeman, so he never paid into Social Security as a policeman. Yet no. Somehow we qualified because of when he was in the Army. And I went back and actually looked, Nance, wow. I think he paid a total of $35 into Social Security when he was in the Army. Because how much money did he make in the Army in World War II? Not very much. And we were paid, you know, not a lot, but a couple hundred a month for 20 years. Or maybe it was $300-$400 a month. It wasn't a lot, but it was enough to save up and pay for Notre Dame education in those days. It wouldn't now. But you know, it sort of didn't make sense that if you had a full teacher's pension from the Chicago Public Schools and you worked, you know, a little bit in the summer to get full Social Security, there should have been some kind of adjustment, I guess. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, it works both ways. I mean, my annuity can be knocked down if I exceed the income limit, whether it's if I took another job within the pension system, as a lot of people, you know, still do. Or if I was earning Social Security, you know, salary and having Social Security taken out and it exceeded a certain amount, my pension would be knocked down too. And that's so it's you know, works in both directions really. So
well, if Nance would have got out of college, went to work for the Chicago Public Schools, never did anything else, which I think is pretty hard to do over 50 years of work. But if you never did anything else and retired at age 65 in Chicago Public Schools. Did you get any Social Security? You never paid in a dime?
No.
No.
And this does this change that?
No, whatever the minimum number of quarters. I can't recall offhand, Nancy. You have to, so many quarters in order to get a Social Security award.
Yeah, you have to have 10 years. So what, 40
years,
quarters?
Yeah.
40 quarters.
Yeah. 40 quarters, right.
So if you never, this isn't changed. If you never paid in, you're still not getting, you're getting nothing still, right?
Right.
I just don't know if you get Medicare at that point. If
you get Medicare, but you'd have to pay for Part B on your own, and you don't get an annuity. You know, you don't get an award every month. So,
would you get Part A on your own if you get Medicare? Do you get Part A if you never paid in?
Yeah, you'll get that whether you have Social Security.
Well, the Medicare tax is separate. You're paying Medicare tax even if you're working for the city.
Right. Right.
You're still paying that.
Part B. I mean, that's deducted from my monthly Social Security. And, you know, I could also pay for that on my own. Even if I didn't qualify for a Social Security award, I could still purchase Part B. I just have to pay for it every month or quarterly.
Well, don't we? We all do, though, don't we? Or they have to pay more than what we do.
Well, it's optional. For you don't have to take Part B because it's over and above what you get in Part A, which you don't have to pay for.
Don't confuse the two. Your Medicare is a separate payment you pay in for Social Security, right? So that's a different pot. The only combination is if you get the Part B, they take it out of your Social Security check just so they get it. They're not really connected, right, John?
No, and you could pay for Part B even if you weren't entitled to any Social Security income at all.
Right, but we pay for Part B now. All of us do, right?
Right.
No, only if you elect to get it, and if you don't take it. If you want to get it later on, you pay a huge penalty by delaying, and you pay that penalty until you're dead. So you have to make that decision at, you know, when you elect to take your, you know, when you reach 65 or become Medicare eligible. If you want Part B, you can decline it, and, you know, you're on your own, or you can purchase it, but you have to pay for it on your own if you're not getting Social Security. And if you are getting Social Security, that premium will be deducted from every monthly Social Security payment.
Right, but it's the same payment. I mean, if you took it, if you chose to take it, okay.
Yeah, the amount is the same, yeah.
Well, do you think this fact that they're charging more for this is going to make any dent in what Carl's always talking about with the big hole in government is the medical piece? Do you think the extra $10 a month everybody's going to have to pay is going to make any difference to that? To that shot? I don't think so. I mean, it makes some difference, I guess, but...
Social Security is going to be insolvent by 2033. With all of these changes, you know, it's going to probably, you know, make that happen about 6 months sooner. So,
well, the Social Security piece, I mean, I think the old age part is not near as bad a shape as people think. But there has to have been a... the idea... Did you guys read that Washington Post article? I'm going to try and find it. Maybe Greg can find it. Where the guy won a Pulitzer Prize for... the article was not named The Horseshoe of Despair, but it essentially was... that's what it was about. He took a horseshoe part of the country. Where did he start, John? He started in like West Virginia and somewhere
West
down...
West Virginia.
Went down to Alabama, Mississippi, and across over in Louisiana, and then up essentially into Arkansas, which... essentially forms a horseshoe, right? And he went to like all those counties. I don't know if you read this, Nancy, when it was happening.
No, I did not.
We have to find this because if it's published, it's worth reading. But they went through a lot of the counties. You know, there's a lot of counties that are on long-term disability is essentially the new unemployment. So that part of Social Security was always pretty flush, right, John? I don't know how flush that is anymore. But there's four pieces of Social Security, right? There's old age pension, there's age-dependent children, there's disability, and then there's... I thought there was the burial part. There's four. You get something if you croak toward your funeral.
Yeah, it's like $255.
Yeah, it's a very small piece. But a lot of these people in some of these areas, there's a county in Alabama, Nancy, how many people got on... long-term disability, John, it was some incredible number. It was like...
Oh, it's a huge percentage of the population.
But you read the individual cases, and some doctor was approving all these people's disability and so forth, and they're interviewing some lady who, John, did she work in a nursing home or something? And she said, yeah, but her back at age 50 was shot, you know, helping people out of bed for 30 years. This is a place that don't have that thing where you put your arms in it and it gets people out of bed with the people and have to drag you out. She said something like, I could easily work for any job I could sit down. She goes, I don't have a friend, I don't know anybody who ever had a job like other people have where you sit down all day. She goes, everybody I know has got a bum back, legitimately. She goes, I don't want to be on disability. Give me a regular job. There aren't any. It was one hand, you sit there and go, how are all these people on disability? On the other hand, you read the different stories and you go, God, that's awful. Right, Jen?
Yeah. And you throw AI into the mix and you can have a perfectly good back and still not get a job. So.
Well, then what was the group that had the three Winnebagos kind of tied together in West Virginia? And they was getting how many checks? The kids supposedly had autism, but they wouldn't let the kids go get checked. And the kids were getting checked. It was like five or six checks. Going into the one Winnebago, right?
You're starting to sound like a Cook County politician.
Yeah, I mean, it was... the individual stories were horrible. All these
how many pensions can I get? Right?
Well, all these people that worked in the coal mines and how bad they are. And I mean, you know, it was the horseshoe of despair, pretty much. And all these people are getting government money, and I'm going to say most probably, I don't say deserve it, but what else are they going to do, Jen? I mean... these problems are not easy ones to solve, I guess is my point here. So, Nance, are you guys going to have a big year? And without refinancing, there's got to be firms that used to do that all day long that aren't even in existence, aren't there?
a lot of the firms are gone. I mean, the whole industry is really pared down compared to what it used to be. And so
you're hanging in, and obviously so is Odd, and because you guys have been doing it for a while and everybody knows you, right?
I think there is it's a lot of repeat business. It's been a lot of referral business. I mean, referrals are huge. It just, but you know, it's always a good day when you're getting referrals, and you know, you can make it work.
Are banks still big competitors, or it was for a while the banks were doing it, then it was the guys that only did mortgages, and then there are people like you that are, you kind of work with somebody, but you're pretty much independent, right?
Right, but I believe that it's just a combination of all three. I don't think mortgage departments right now are very big within banks or institutions, because obviously everyone's counting every penny, and that department doesn't need a lot of people in it because there's not a lot of loans going through. There's a lot of home equity lines of credit going through, so banks would and banking institutions would have set up for that, which they could easily take those people and throw them on the mortgage side of it. I mean, that's not a problem. You're going to have a core unit, I'm trying to say, in each bank, but it's not going to be a flourishing unit. It's not going to be a big number.
Are savings and loans, are any of them still around in this area?
That I haven't seen those in since, what, God, the 80s?
Yeah. Well, John, there's still a couple that call themselves savings and loans, don't they?
Oh, yeah, and there are community banks still write mortgages. I don't think in great numbers. I don't know if too many people get their financing through those institutions anymore. It's the competition has gotten so stiff that it's really hard for somebody with a brick and mortar place to have a going business in mortgages these days. It used to be a given you could do it, you know. I mean, people lived in their neighborhoods, they spent their money in their neighborhoods, and they got their mortgages in their neighborhoods, and that's ancient history now. So
does anybody hold mortgages other than like the big jumbos?
I was just going to say to John that the community banks are selling theirs off as well. So and being big banks can hold, I mean, banks can hold jumbos. Banks could hold anything they want. It's just a matter of, do they want to? And obviously they don't want that on their books right now. Owning a mortgage is not a, for a bank, is not a security that they really want in their portfolio. They really want commercial loans. They want home equity lines of credit, because they only have, because it fluctuates with prime, so they keep up with it. They would never want to give anyone a fixed rate if they don't have to right now.
Right, right.
We got a couple of minutes, Jen, only a couple. We have another building down here. A couple of weeks ago, I found out, bit the dust. It wasn't the insurance exchange, it was insurance something or other, on the northwest corner of Wells and Van Buren. That place, they just kicked it to the bank. There's another one in the area, but bit the dust. What does that do to the tax rolls? What does that do to anything? I mean,
Oh, God, Tom. I just saw another foreclosure. It's 55 East Jackson, which is just east of DePaul's campus, you know, Jackson and Wabash. And DePaul vacated this. They had a huge lease in this building, and they got out of that during COVID. And now, you know, the building's never gotten its occupancy rate back again. And it's got a $62 million foreclosure suit on it. This is making it really impossible to get any kind of activity on, like, storefront leasing or anything else. I noticed, like, the Palmer House, I walked by there this is a couple of weeks ago before Christmas, and I just couldn't believe it. There were no storefront businesses anywhere on the east side of State Street, and the Palmer House is in foreclosure, and the lender has gotten all of the commercial space, you know, all the stuff in the lobby and on State Street and on Wabash, away from the management of the hotel. But they can't make a go of it either. There's no business at all on that side of State Street. And any building, I think, that's now in foreclosure is, I just don't see them in a position where they can compete anymore for getting, you know, tenants in there to get any kind of cash flow. And that's what's killing the market overall. People walk down the street and see nothing happening. There may be people in the upper floors eking out livings on their businesses, But the overall impression people have is this is a dead part of the world. There's no point investing here. Who would come down here? Who would shop in these places or eat in these restaurants if they could exist? So the more of these buildings that go into distress with their mortgages, it's killing it for everybody else around them too.
Well, it's like a human body. I mean, you can't just, it's either working or it's not, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The building I'm talking about was the one where they had issues. Well, they had, long story, no time for today. The guy who bought it was kind of a weird duck way back in the day. He was the same guy who shorted all the stock in LTV, more than there was stock was out there. And he owned that building, and he owned the building where the facade was coming down on the L tracks, and the mayor was all pissed off at him. Remember that whole story?
Oh, yeah.
Right? But downstairs, they had, Nancy had the burrito buggy, Chinese place, a Korean place, and they had the Billy Goats. So they had four serious businesses downstairs. They haven't had anybody down there. They kicked them all out because they're going to remodel the place. And then COVID showed up, and now they just, I don't know how much they spent on the place, and it's all just kicked right back to the, I'm sure they took a big hit, but you wonder, who owns the paper on this stuff? It's not an individual bank like it used to be, right?
No.
It could be, you know, seven or eight banks that went in together. It could be anything. It could be private equity funds from Wall Street. You don't know?
Well, it's a... Well, guys, we have to get together for the new year pretty soon. SB
Happy
Futures
New
now.
Happy New Year, Nancy.
Yeah, Nance.
Happy New Year, John.
I haven't seen you yet, Nance, or you, John. We'll have to get together for a New Year's something. SB Futures up 51. Nancy Futures up 233. Looks like our second day of pretty good rally here. We'll see if it holds. I think it might, but we'll find out tomorrow morning. Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.